So our next speaker is Christina Kasparian from McGill University. She's going to talk to us about when the second language takes over, ERP evidence of L1 attrition in morphosyntactic processing.
All right, thank you everybody for coming. So we all know by now, after our conference on multilingualism, that there's a long history of claims and debates surrounding the idea of a critical period for language learning. And so basically, this claim says that there are maturational limits on the brain's ability to change, so on neuroplasticity. And while the first language is hardwired in the early years of life, a second language has to rely on different systems in the brain than those that are used for the L1. But there is a lot of recent evidence showing increasing evidence of neuroplasticity, even in adulthood, and this has started to cast doubt on this claim. So this critical period theory is quite controversial. So there are two ways of studying the critical period hypothesis. Behavioral methods focus on linguistic performance and ask whether it is possible to reach a native-like level in a second language when it was learned after the critical period, whereas neurocognitive methods focus on the underlying systems involved in language learning and language processing. So the question then becomes, if a late learner does reach a high level of proficiency in that second language, is their brain doing this in the same way as early learners or native speakers? So are they engaging in the same processes, in the same areas of the brain, with the same speed and automaticity, or are they engaging in different compensatory strategies that we don't actually see in native speakers or early learners? A number of studies have shown that late learners differ from native speakers in their linguistic performance and in the neurocognitive processes involved. But a major problem of a lot of this research has been that the late age of acquisition is often confounded with a low proficiency level in that second language, or at the very least with a low exposure level. So we don't actually know for sure if the differences that we see in the brain are because the second language was learned late or because speakers are not fully proficient in that second language or they're not very exposed to that second language. So a major aim of our work is to tease apart age effects from proficiency effects, and we look at minority language speakers or attriters. And these are individuals who have a low exposure and declining proficiency in their native language that they learned from birth, but a high exposure and high proficiency level in the second language that they learned late in adulthood. So the question is, are they still native-like in their linguistic abilities and in how their brain is processing their native language, despite their very limited use and very limited exposure to this native language? And of course, the second aim is to study the neurocognitive aspects of language attrition, which are still really unexplored. So Silvina described language attrition as this loss or decline in the native language, and this is what we're looking at as well. So our population are minority language speakers, more specifically Italian native speakers who were born in Italy. They're first-generation immigrants, so they were born in Italy and they lived there till adulthood, and they had fully acquired their standard Italian before they moved to Canada. And then they became dominant in English and have very limited use of their Italian nowadays. And what's interesting is that when we recruited them, every single one of them reported changes to their Italian, anecdotally. They all said, I'm confusing words and I'm having trouble finding words in Italian. I transfer English words into Italian when I speak Italian. And also, their Italian grammar is heavily influenced by English grammar. So because of these self-reports of attrition, we feel comfortable calling this group our group of attriters. And in this talk, we're going to be comparing them to Italian native speakers who still live in Italy and who are fully exposed to Italian. And they have minimal exposure to English and to other languages. But just for you to have the larger picture of the study in mind, we're also comparing them, not in this talk, but in the study, to English native speakers who are learning Italian as a second language, so these are our bilingual controls, and to English native speakers as well. So this is just to give you some information at a glance about the two groups. So the attriters are on the left and the English the Italian native speakers living in Italy on the right. And what's important to note is that although this is an ERP study primarily, we did give them a lot of background measures on their language acquisition, on their history, and we also gave them several proficiency measures. And we gave the same proficiency measures to the control group of Italian monolinguals, which many studies don't always do. So when we look at the proficiency measures between the two groups, you can see that the attriters are lower in their Italian L1 proficiency compared to the Italian native speakers, but this is really not a very big difference at all. So what we wanted to see is whether with ERPs we might be seeing more attrition. So do ERPs reveal something more than behavioral proficiency measures do? So the first experiment I'll tell you about is on lexical access in online comprehension of Italian, or vocabulary access. So we're looking at their native language. And we want to see if there's evidence of lexical attrition when they process Italian online, and whether we can find some experimental support for all these anecdotal reports of confusing words in their native Italian. So what we did in our design, we had pairs of nouns that differed only in their final vowel, but have a different meaning. So for example, cappello means hat, versus cappella, which is chapel, or mento, which means chin, versus menta, mint. And we created sentence context for each of these words, and we presented them visually in three different conditions. We had a correct condition, where each word in the pair occurred in its proper context. We had a swap condition where we switched the words in the pair so they didn't belong in the context anymore. So cappella occurred in the cappello context and vice versa. And we had a third condition, a mismatch condition, where we took a word from another pair and put it in there. So menta, for example, would occur in the cappello context. And this is a balanced design, which is great for ERPs because each target word occurs in each condition. And as I mentioned, it's a reading study, and what they had to do while we recorded their brain activity with the ERP method was that they had to rate the acceptability of these sentences on a scale from 1 to 5. So what do ERPs tell us, just in a nutshell? We know that specific language processes trigger identifiable brainwave patterns. So one important component when we're looking at lexical semantics is what we call the N400. So the N400 is elicited when a semantically anomalous word is detected in a context, and the more implausible or anomalous the word, the larger the N400. So the funny thing about ERPs is that negative is plotted up and positive is plotted down. Just to be different, I suppose. So the N400 that we see here is this blip occurring at around 400 milliseconds after an anomalous word is detected. Another important component is the P600, which is a positive wave, so going down, occurring around or just after 600 milliseconds. And this is supposed to reflect reanalysis of a sentence interpretation or some kind of conflict monitoring. So what did we expect to find? In our native Italians who still live in Italy, we thought we would see a classic N400 for both kinds of weird sentences, so both the mismatch condition and the swap condition, where we had switched cappello and cappella. And we thought this would be followed by a small P600, reflecting reanalysis of the sentence interpretation. In the attriters, however, or in the immigrant group, we thought if it's true that words are confused, then this swap error might go undetected. So we expected an N400 only in the mismatch condition, and either a smaller or no N400 at all for the swap condition. And we thought this would be followed by a large P600 because maybe they're engaging in more of a second thought if they miss this initially and then detect it later on. So here are the ERP results for the Italian native speakers. The green line is always the correct condition, the red line is the mismatch condition, and the blue is the condition where we've swapped the very similar sounding words. So you can see that, as predicted, the Italian native speakers elicit a large N400 for both of the anomalous sentences. And they also elicit a small but significant P600, especially for the swap condition. When we look at the attriters, on the other hand, we expected that the swap condition wouldn't elicit an N400, but it actually does, and so does the mismatch condition. But when we look in the P600 time window, it seems that this P600 is larger in this group than in the Italian native speakers. So This was surprising, actually. We didn't expect to find an N400 effect for the swap. But this is when we look at the group as a whole. So when we actually take a closer look at these minority language speakers, we see that there are really two subgroups in them. So one subgroup has a higher proficiency range in Italian, so in their native language, and the other subgroup has a lower proficiency range. So the people with the lower proficiency range are the more likely candidates of attrition. So we wanted to see whether their ERP patterns might differ on a continuum from being native-like to showing mild attrition effects and then strong attrition effects. So when we split them up, I put the controls on the left as a reminder. These are the people, the attriters, who have a higher Italian proficiency. We can see that they look very similar. Both anomalous conditions elicit a large N400. There's no significant difference between the two, and there's no huge P600 here either. However, when we look at the attriters who are in the lower range of their native language proficiency, then we start to see some interesting differences. So again, here are the native speakers, and then here we actually found what we expected to find. So a significant N400 only for the mismatch condition, and no difference in the swap compared to the correct sentences. So it seems like they're not detecting this switch in the words. And then a large P600 for the swap condition as well. So this is just to further convince you. It's just showing you the same patterns in a different way. So you can see that the high proficiency attriters are patterning with the native speakers, whereas the low proficiency attriters don't show a convincing negativity here in the N400 window and show a really predominant positivity later on. So what we concluded from this was that we see a different pattern of processing in attriters, especially those who are in the lower range of their L1 proficiency. So the swap doesn't seem to be readily detected. So this might show less automatic processing than in this group, whereas the large P600 for them might reflect this kind of second thought conflict monitoring, as if they miss the error initially and then have to reanalyze the sentence. So this is actually pretty exciting because it's the first ever ERP evidence on attrition in vocabulary access, and it really gives us some experimental support of this, all these anecdotal reports of them confusing their words, and it's pretty surprising and striking because it's in their native language. So the second experiment I'll briefly tell you about looks at grammar processing in the same group with the same method. So we wanted to see whether there's evidence of attrition in grammar, although behavioral studies have suggested that grammar might be less vulnerable than the vocabulary to forgetting. So we want to see whether attriters are interpreting and processing Italian differently than native speakers due to interference from English. So we picked relative clauses because there are some interesting cross-linguistic differences between Italian and English. So in terms of grammaticality, there are four word orders that are possible and grammatical in Italian, but two out of these four are impossible and ungrammatical in English. And there are also differences in the types of cues that speakers use to interpret a sentence in each language. So Italian is a very relatively free word order language, so Italian speakers tend to rely more on semantic cues, whereas English speakers rely more on word order. So in our sentences, we put some strong agent-patient relationships, so combinations of nouns and verbs like policeman arrests thief, so that these would provide strong semantic cues. So we could see if the attriters are making use of these or not. And the task, again, was to rate the acceptability of these sentences while we recorded their ERPs. So here are the four kinds of word orders that we tested. I'll just run you through them. The first is a subject relative clause. I'll read the English translation. The cat that chases the mice runs in the garden. So this is perfectly grammatical both in Italian and in English. The second word order is an object relative clause. So the English translation would be the mice that chases the cat tremble with fear. So here it's the cat that's the subject of the sentence, but this word order is not possible in English. So when you're reading it, you might think that mice is the subject of the sentence, and then when you get to the verb, there's a mismatch in number. So this, I put an X to show that between English and Italian, this word order clashes. And the third order is another subject-relative clause. So the cat that the mice chases runs in the garden. So again, the cat is the subject of the sentence. This shouldn't sound correct in English. So again, there's a clash here between English and Italian. And the last one is an object-relative clause. The mice that the cat chases tremble with fear. So this should sound perfectly fine to you in English, unless I've completely confused you by now with all of these word orders. So the important thing to take away from this slide is that there are two word orders that clash between English and Italian, and these are where we would expect to see transfer effects in the attriters if their dominant English grammar is influencing their native language grammar. So what we expected to see in Italian native speakers is that they would rely on semantic cues. So they would show an N400 effect when processing these sentences. And in the attriters, however, if they're following their Italian grammar, then they should show the same pattern as the native controls. But if they're transferring and relying on their L2 English grammar, then there should be little or no reliance on semantic cues, because we saw that this is not a cue that English speakers use. And the conditions 2 and 3 should be perceived as strong grammatical violations, because they are so in English. So what we expected to see then was a LAN, LAN, which is a nickname for a left anterior negativity, followed by a P600. So here are the online acceptability ratings for the four conditions. Remember that the two in the middle in red are the ones that are not possible in English but grammatical in Italian. One thing I have to mention, though, is that although these two word orders are grammatical in Italian, they are dispreferred. So they're unpreferred because they're a little bit less frequent, they're difficult, but they are grammatical. So then what we see is that for the two word orders where there's a clash between English grammar and Italian grammar, the attriters in pink are rating them much lower than the Italians in Italy. But there's no difference for the other two conditions that are the same in both languages. So first, with the ERPs, I'm going to focus on this contrast here between the two first word orders. So these are the ERP results for the Italian native speakers. In pink is the condition that is grammatical but unpreferred in Italian, but completely ungrammatical in English. So what we see is that they do elicit an N400 here, and you can see it on the map on the right, followed by a significant P600 as well. So it seems that they are processing the semantic cues first, followed by the grammar of the language. Then when we look at the attriters, we see no evidence of any N400. So you don't see a negativity here and neither here. So it seems like they're not relying on any of these semantic cues. But we see a stronger grammatical violation effect in this group, reflected here by the larger P600. Then when we focus on the two last word orders, again in the Italian native speakers, in the blue condition is the perfectly correct one, the red one is grammatical but unpreferred. We see an early frontal positivity in the native speakers, followed by a P600. So this is consistent with what has been found in German relative clause processing, so it seems to reflect some kind of mild garden path effect, because these sentences are a little bit difficult, but it's not the pattern of an outright grammatical violation. But when we look at the attriters, we see a negativity instead of a positivity, but at the moment it's not completely clear to us whether this is an N400 or a LAN, because it has a different topographical distribution in two time windows, and I'll show you that on the next slide. But there's definitely no positivity there. But it is followed, like the native speakers, by the P600 that we expected to find. So again, this shows a different pattern. There's an early negativity instead of an early positivity. And this just illustrates the same thing with a different view. So on the right, you have the attriters who show negativities, and then a smaller P600 here. Okay, so what we concluded from this study was that for relative clause word orders that are ungrammatical in English but grammatical in Italian, the attriters were giving them lower ratings behaviorally, and they were also processing them differently when they were reading in their native language. So this is some evidence of that L2 dominance, so dominance in English, does affect the grammar in the native L1. So just to wrap up, this is some first evidence on attrition using ERPs. And we can see that the dominant and highly proficient second language does influence the first language in both vocabulary and in grammar. And we also know now that online measures such as ERPs provide crucial information about attrition, because some of these effects were really not visible in the behavioral proficiency tasks, like in overall measures of proficiency. So this suggests that there's evidence of ongoing brain plasticity even in adulthood, and we know this by looking at the L1. But there seems to be also a downside of brain plasticity, like Silvina also said, that if the brain is still able to change with experience, then the L1 doesn't seem as privileged or as hardwired and stable as we might have initially thought. Thank you.
Hi there. That's very fun. I just had a question for you. Are you familiar with Lee Osterhout's work on this, on attrition? I was just checking PubMed, and it's not published yet, but you're maybe not.
Is it L1 attrition or L2 attrition?
L1 attrition and immigrants.
Okay.
And they've also been looking at, they've been looking at acquisition in one direction and mm-hmm. attrition in the other direction.
Right.
And what related to your work, I'm wondering if you've looked at it this way. They find that as the language learners acquire the language, they go in response to grammatical errors, they go from an N400 to a mm-hmm. P600, and that in attrition they go back the other way. The important thing is that there's a lot of individual variability,
right? There is,
and that there will be N400 people and P600 people over the time course of attrition. Sort of indicating a continuum of decay from N400 the other way around, from P600 back to N400.
Right.
And that they find a strong correlation in the amplitude of these two. So I was wondering if you've looked at your data that way.
I started to, but it was too much for the talk as well. So we also initially, we know that work as well, and we thought that, as they suggest, L1 attrition might be similar to L2 acquisition, but in reverse. And regarding individual differences, we looked in our minority group in Neotriters at the patterns for almost every individual person, and I'm planning now to do correlations with both proficiency measures and the amplitudes, and also to see the people who pattern in different ways, whether it's also correlated with how they rate the sentences online as well. So their online proficiency in those structures and how they show, what patterns they show. So it is possible that there are different subgroups and different patterns, and whether we can place them on a continuum right now, I don't know, but it's definitely something I really wanted to look into. Thank you.
Can I ask you about the Italian
sure.
monolingual data for a start? You said these Italians rely on semantics when they interpret protagonists like agents and patients, etc. But there is a bit of work by McWinney and Bates going back showing that they rely on agreement.
Yes.
And they did this huge cross-linguistic study where they showed that Italians rely on agreement in detecting agents in sentences. So I'm a bit surprised that you get an N400 in this case in these sentences which don't meet the agreement expectation an Italian native speaker may have when he or she gets, let's say, a singular subject like il gatto, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or i topi, plural, and then gets a singular verb form. Why is that you get an N400 and not like a sign of an agreement violation, like a LAN or a P600 there, just in the native speakers of Italian?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good question. And I do agree that Italian is a language that relies on agreement. The reason I didn't put that on the slide is because that's common to both languages. So English and Italian both rely on agreement as a cue. Wow. So I just wanted to put the cross-linguistic differences just to start. Another thing to mention is with respect to why we didn't find the LAN, we did find the P600, actually. So it does seem like they are processing agreement and they are processing morphosyntax. But initially, this has the topography and it really looks like an N400. So it could be that first they process the semantic cue or they're sensitive to the semantic cue in these sentences that are really pushing that interpretation. And then they do show the P600. So it's not like they're only showing an N400.
Yeah. I mean, the point of this work by Bates and McWinney was that English and Italian differ mm-hmm. in that respect, that English doesn't rely on agreement in the same way
right.
as Italian. Instead, English relies on word order to identify agents and patients. Right.
But in the Italian native speakers who don't speak English and who are reading in Italian, then we would expect them to rely on the semantic cues.
No, they should rely on agreement. The Italian native speakers should rely on agreement, if that's right, not on word order, right?
Not on word order, but on semantic cues and on agreement, but not on word order. Word order is English. English relies on word order.
I know, but...
I don't know if I'm listening. Okay, we could talk at lunch.
So I think we'll stop here and thank our speakers for the session.
Thank you.